Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
You are listening to Mist Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Mist Apex Podcast. This is our Japanese Grand Prix race review. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners, so let's be friends. It's an old school classic Japanese Grand Prix that isn't the biggest track for the modern Formula One car, but it always feels like a real F1 race. So let's get into our race review. And I'll just remind you that we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. So just a little bit of meetup admin. There are two opportunities to come and hang out and watch a live show. The first one is in Miami. So if you are in the Miami area for the Miami Grand Prix after the sprint race on Saturday from around 7 p.m, we're going to be recording our sprint race review, and we're going to be filming a Miami Fixes Formula One show. So we'll be taking audience questions there. And we're also going to have a little bit of a quiz element, and we're going to be showing a classic F1 race while we have some cocktails. We are using the Boxbox Auto Social Club, which is down near towards Miami Beach. So that'll be a great location to come and hang out. And we'll finish just in time for the bright lights of Miami Beach for you to go and wander and go and have fun there. So if you want to meet up with us, check out the event. It's a free ticketed event, so you've got to register. And we've got a tip jar there. So, you know, the more I can collect from contributions, the less trouble I'll get in for swanning off to Miami by myself. MistApexPodcast.com/Miami, or click the links in the show notes below. Tentative plans for a UK meetup, so somewhere north of London, Milton Keynes, Northampton way. If you want to get on the mailing list for that, email me with the subject line UK meetup, and it's at spanners@mistapex.net. We want to hang out with you. We want to be friends in real life. I'm joined by my podcast friends, firstly from Australia, because he's one of the only ones awake. It's Jonathan Simon.
That's correct. I didn't need coffee for this podcast, which was great. And I love watching Formula One cars around Suzuka. And today felt like a sim race for some reason when it came down to tyres. And we'll unravel all of that in a little bit longer.
And we're joined by live watch along streamer extraordinaire. It's a Scott Stuffy Tuffy. Hello, Scott.
Morning, Spanners, for another early one, second week in a row, and for what was a good weekend for Lewis Hamilton's future F1 car, not his current one.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I think Lewis might be sabotaging Mercedes and just looking ahead up the road, just making sure there's a gap for next season. And we're joined by Mist Apex MotoGP podcast host, Kyle Power. Hello, Kyle.
Good morning. Sounds very weird to say that on a podcast, but I was loving the 97-style-esque overtakes. I'll explain a bit more later.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, let's explain a bit more now. So as I was saying in the intro there, this is just a track I love watching F1 cars go around. And one of the key standout features there, Kyle, today was there was a lot of non-DRS overtakes, and there was a lot of overtakes in the S's, which I don't recall seeing in recent years.
Yeah, we haven't seen moves like that for ages, and that's why I said 97. So that harked me back to Eddie Irvine going around the outside of Michael Schumacher and Jack Villeneuve in turn six going into Dunlop in that amazing race where he was waiting for the phone call. And we saw Yuki pull off two awesome moves there, but also a Mr. Stroll. This might be the only positive thing we can say about Stroll this weekend, but he did pull off a couple of very nice overtakes, I think on consecutive laps there as well. So it's always nice to see a non-DRS blast past, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing, Jono. We did see a lot of non-DRS passes, but we also saw a lot of tyre offset passes, which kind of, I know that you need one or the other. You need the DRS blast or you need a tyre offset for these cars to be able to overtake. So I feel like I'm complaining. Oh yeah, we got on track non-DRS overtakes, but I'm still not happy because the tyre offset made it too easy.
It's a good point, because if the cars were all the same and if the tyres never degraded and if there was no DRS, and if the drivers were all robots, well, there would be no overtakes. What's the point of watching a race? So, yes, you have to have some sort of difference in the race. We don't have refueling anymore. We don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. But the tire offset today was one of the – it felt unusual for modern F1. You know, I know we've had a couple of races in the past like this, but it seemed like Pirelli have always been spot on in terms of durability. This is the kind of F1 – personally, and I'm not sure if this is, I'm not intending for this to be a hot take, but this is kind of the F1 I enjoy. I enjoy Formula One to be like this. It's not the extremes of 2011 Pirelli where they came into the sport and really attacked tire deg, but it's a nice in-between from the good old one-stop races we had and the good old four-stop races. It's the perfect in-between.
I absolutely agree with Johnny there. And as much as I like to put the knives into Pirelli, because I see every time on this podcast, I seem to bang on about them bringing too hard a tyres and it wasn't good. I actually think they brought the hardest tyres in the compound, minus their zero, C0, which I don't think we've seen yet. And it worked. We had somebody trying a risky one-stop and not quite making it work. We saw somebody making a one-stop work, but we also saw like the standard being two-stop. And as a rule, you kind of want every Grand Prix to be a minimum of a two-stop, but you want the strategy window either side. Ideally, I would have liked one stepped softer, so I would like to see a three-stop, a two-stop, and maybe someone going a crazy one-stop, but I actually think Pirelli kind of got it right today.
I think that might be asking a bit much to go, because this is already a fair bit harder wearing than we've seen most modern Pirelli ones in the last couple of years. So to get what was a clear two-stop, because I think from the red flag, I'm not counting those stops when it came to strategy, because it was that much of a reset that even Alonso, you know, didn't. If it was a two-stop, a normal one-stop race, and say Alonso was getting that soft tyre out of the way, they'd have had that red flag and he'd have gone to hards. And that might have happened at Sochi or something like that. But here, Scott, you know, he chose to go back on the softs, which sort of shows that it was an out-and-out reset and that tyre deg was an issue.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that red flag, which we'll get to, I was only pushing for not even half a lap before the red flag came out. It was very quickly that it was thrown, but it was realised that was the case. So, they hardly scrubbed their tyres at all, which is why a lot of the teams decided to just remain on that initial tyre, which the red flag does allow you to do. Of course, we saw Mercedes try that risky one stop. But it was interesting to see the tyre allocations before the race, because lots of teams in the top 10, all the teams in the top 10, decided to try different strategies. You had McLaren and Mercedes with two new hards and one set of mediums, and Ferrari and Red Bull on the flip side with two mediums and one hard. And then Aston Martin just went completely out there with Alonso keeping a set of softs, which seemed to really work well for him. But yeah, second week in a row, if you ask me, where Pirelli have done a good job. So hopefully it's, the theme continues for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and particularly in this sort of COVID-induced forced tyre choices now. So remember in the before times, before the event, we used to get, the teams used to have basically much, you know, they could choose how many of each compound that they wanted, and you'd see strategy variation that way. Now it's locked in. All the teams get the same allocation, which I still think is a bit of a shame, because I would still like to see somebody, you know, bringing maybe six sets of the mediums and trying, a more of aggressive two-stop with no management or and bringing less soft. So we don't have that anymore. So it puts more emphasis on how they use them via the practice.
Yeah, just be mindful that weather can't always be replicated at every weekend. And so the temperature today, and notably the track temperature, played a big part in how the strategy sort of evolved over the course of the race, you know, and the red flag could have almost ruined it because the track was going to cool down as we went closer to the evening. So that's something where, again, we're not ideally going to have these same conditions at every race, I don't think. I mean, if we do, I wouldn't complain. I kind of like Formula One like this at the moment, but that's also a part and a factor that we have to consider, that if Pirelli decide to bring a certain amount of compounds to a racetrack, they can't tell if it's going to rain, they can't tell if it's going to be 20 degree track temp or 45 or even 60.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that was a contributing factor, but the strategy was somewhat altered by a little bit of an incident. So we get to play a very early game of, sorry, Australia.
Whose fault is it?
And lap one didn't even get to turn two. And in fact, before that incident between Albon and Ricciardo, I was looking at how they all went through and I went, everyone's being very sensible here. It was a really sensible start. They all tucked in and went, oh, looks like they're settling in for the long haul. No big dive bomb. But also factor in that, and I meant to bring this up with particularly Stuffy and Kyle, was turn one a little bit disappointing today? Is it always like that? It seemed incredibly difficult to defend. We saw loads of cars trying to defend into turn one, and you can just sling it around the outside.
I thought they were incredibly well-behaved, to be honest. And actually, as often as we see in Suzuka, the cars on the inside of turn one and two tend to lose out. You kind of want to be on the outside so you can sweep around, but you put a lot of trust in those cars on the inside not washing out wide. And we've seen lots of incidents in years gone by there. So I think they're all spot on. I think the teams would have been happy with their drivers. Even if you drop one or two positions, you're not dropping a front wing. So I thought that was well driven by everybody.
Yeah, except... Go on, Scott.
No, I was just going to add into T1. Yeah, I think a lot of the overtakes we saw was a difference in tyre grip as well, tyre delta. The overtaking move on the outside, you just saw those are able to carry more speed and brake later and be committed to the overtake. So, but then, of course, the start of the race, we got through turn one pretty cleanly, unlike previous years. And then, obviously we had the Ricciardo and Albon incident go on, Spanners. I'm trying to ascertain
is anybody here putting the blame on Albon, because if so, I want you to go first. Okay, well, Stuffy's got a hand up.
Cannot be serious. Okay,
so I will add, firstly, the blame is on Ricciardo 100%. My many years of racing in sim racing, because it's the only relevant racing experience I have at Suzuka, and it means everything to me.
Yes.
I know how much of a low percentage move that is going around the outside of turn three, even if you have grip and drive like Alex Albon had, considering you've just come out of a three wide. So Ricciardo's at fault. However, I'm surprised Alex Albon, I get that the space was there for him to drive into, and it's difficult to kind of not take that extra grip and drive that you've just seen and gained on Ricciardo. However, how many times have we seen a driver, especially on the first lap of a race, make a move stick on the outside of turn three? I just think it was a low percentage
move. I'm going to disagree.
He's ended up paying for it.
Okay, Kyle. Because I definitely am going to disagree with what Scott said.
Scott has half a point. Like, yes, it is a low percentage move, but that's also one of my favourite moves in sim racing when we do that. So, yes, 100% Ricciardo's fault. Albon, I think most drivers in this situation would have done exactly the same. Because if he can hang it out on the outside there, he's then on the inside for the next corner. And, you know, the start of the race is absolutely crucial. You need, at Summer Suzuka, it's very hard to pass. So you need to take any opportunity you get. But just for a mitigating factor for Ricciardo is, you know, he doesn't have spotters like we do in iRacing. He hasn't got somebody in his ear telling you, you've got a car right. And it's all happening so quick. He was spooked by Stroll on his inside. He clearly sees Stroll in his mirror because his eyes are naturally looking that way anyway. He's probably not even checked his other mirror because he hasn't had time. And he's just a bit clumsily just drifted over. So it's 100% his fault, but there are some mitigating circumstances.
I don't, Jono, okay, I think you guys are all being way too reasonable on Ricciardo here. So I'm going to definitely argue like this is 1,000% Ricciardo's fault and not an Albon at all. Are you with me? You're with me, Jono?
Yeah,
go on then. Go for it.
So if you're Daniel Ricciardo, you're looking left. Why not look right? I know he's worried. He sees Stroll in his peripherals. Do you not see Albon in your peripherals on the right-hand side? You know, I know it's easy for me to say the track is less than 10 meters wide at this point of the racetrack, you know, heading into the spoon curves. It's one of the narrowest tracks in the season. If this was at the Indian Grand Prix where it was, you know, 50 meters wide, well, then we wouldn't be talking about whose fault is it here. So there's that factor also that comes into play. But I think the onus is definitely, I know your agenda, Spanners, is when we play whose fault is it, is it 100% someone's fault or zero?
Actually, no, that's not true. That's not true. It has to be predominantly someone's fault. So Maria in our live
90%
chat, recovery. Hello live chat, says, I think it was a racing incident. So no offense, but boo, we don't do that here. So what we do here, this is based on my marriage, which is 100% blame relationship. If the house was on fire, we would have to stop, decide whose fault it was, and then when it was my fault, then we can go and rescue the kids and a cat. Stuffy.
I will say, just in defense of Daniel Ricciardo, while I still agree it's 100% his fault, the reason he doesn't look right is because I don't think he even expected Albon to get as such a good of traction that he got on the inside. Like, it was... But which is why I say I know it's a low percentage move on the outside. It was still really, it was such a good drive that he did get up alongside Ricciardo, which is why he was so focused on Stroll. And you can visibly see on the onboard that he looks left. He never once looks right. However, that lack of not assuming or expecting that someone would come up on his inside of turn two is obviously his fault and why the crash occurred.
Kyle.
Yeah, but it's where his eyes are looking at that point. So to back Scott's sort of point up, when you're, you know, the next corner is a left-hander, his head is already naturally going to be looking over to the left. And I don't think he really has time to move his head over to the right to check his right-hand side mirrors. What he should have done is assumed somebody was going to be there and not moved over. And if you look at Stroll's on board, he had loads of room. He actually had loads of room, and Ricciardo did just sort of get spooked and move across, but his head would very much be looking over to the left and not to his right-hand mirror.
John, I think a key point is it is up to Daniel Ricciardo where he looks. So saying, yeah, but he didn't look to the right, that's not an excuse. I've seen loads of people go, yeah, but he wasn't looking to the right. But that is on him to check where he moves into, doesn't already have a car.
That's correct. And on that point, breaking news from the stewards, Lance Stroll was penalised. No, joking, it wasn't Lance Stroll. But it was the stewards have determined there's no further action. And so that means they've decided racing incident.
Correct.
They've said, and now here's the quote from the stewards report. I'm not going to read the full thing. It wasn't Johnny Herbert this week, so it's not 3 pages long. But we determined this to be a first lap incident, they've said.
Boo.
If this incident had occurred on a subsequent lap or without the presence of a third car, Lance Stroll they're talking about here, a different result would have been made, or a different decision would have been made. So what do you guys think about that?
Yes. Okay. So the stewards have a different bar for setting a penalty than we have. I'm giving Daniel Ricciardo 1,000 drive-through penalties for it because that's what we do here. But I think the point that might have been missed, and I had to go back and double check this, was what a shocking start to the race Daniel Ricciardo actually had. So we started P11, and if you look at the start off the line, he shouldn't have been anywhere near Alex Albon. And then even out of turn one, he's slow on the pickup. So I wouldn't be surprised to find out that he had some kind of issue. But on the face of it, he had a bad start. He had a bad turn one. And so Alex Albon almost isn't making a move. He's just, you know, taking the corner as well as he can. And by the time of contact, there might have been a fraction of overlap on the front wheels. So it wasn't, you know, of course, Albon might have been taking evasive action eventually, but he had got to the point where he was front wheel to front wheel. And if Ricciardo hadn't have driven into him, he would have got alongside, it looks like. So I think the only way to even slightly not blame Ricciardo is to say Albon's not allowed to race. But not only is he not allowed to race, but if he sees the car ahead makes a mistake, you have to stop and wait for them to gather it up, cleanse that mistake, and then go and overtake. But I just don't see Albon having done anything wrong at all, Scott.
I still think the state that Williams are in, I understand when the grip is there, you want to go for a move, but I feel like sometimes there's a self-preservation, especially with the position that Williams have been in as well at the moment. However, I will say, Danny Ricciardo, after the race, after the incident, he did say him and Yuki both had very poor starts.
Yeah.
They started on the medium. Everyone else started on softs around them. So they just got absolutely swallowed up. Yuki was late on the brakes, which is key here. Yuki was aggressive and late on the brakes into the first corner, got ahead of Danny Ric and completely avoided seeing that incident at all. But I will say, I feel like we've seen a lot of kind of these moving over incidents since these new regulations anyway, because of the size of the cars and the lack of peripheral vision that these drivers have. They've increased the wing mirrors, but these drivers just can't see. Like when you're driving, especially with these helmets on and that, the peripheral vision you've got, you can't tell if an F1 car is coming up alongside you sometimes. And I think this is becoming a bit more of a common occurrence in modern F1.
Yeah, and another little factor to defend Ricciardo, he was somewhat stymied a little bit by Yuki making an appalling start, and Yuki's at his home Grand Prix. They're both driving Visa crap at Minardis, or whatever they're called, like RBs, and they know that on the first like sort of lap or two, they have to make those moves. So Yuki was really aggressive trying to make up for his bad start. That actually ended up completely nerfing Ricciardo, who was then panicking and, made the mistake of drifting across.
Mm. All right. Well, we're split. That's disappointing. I'm blaming Ricciardo. Bye. Okay, so was I correct that there is a conspiracy to nerf Max Verstappen as a punishment for taking a swipe at the king? Well, on the face of it, it doesn't look like there is. But is that because I called it out? Did I call out the conspiracy? Did I delay their plot? Have I got too close? But it was a bit closer. So Verstappen only just got pole position by something like 0.07 of a second. And it did make me laugh a little bit on the commentary where they go, oh, well, he really had to work for that today. So when he's miles ahead, it just shows how dominant and brilliant he is. And when it's really, really close, he had to really work for it today.
But the good news was the race margin between Max Verstappen's wins this year is diminishing each race. It was like 22 seconds in Bahrain, 13 seconds in Saudi, obviously Australia, DNF, and then obviously today was around about 12 seconds. You don't count the fact that he swerves and celebrates and whatever he does at the line, so that also has a bit of a factor. But you get my point, you know, in the grand scale of things, it's getting smaller. Today, I think his teammate, on the other hand, just did a better job. You know, I absolutely trashed Sergio Perez in Australia and, you know, no regrets about that. But well done to him today. I think this is the exact performance they signed him up for. I don't want to turn this into a Perez topic because we're trying to talk about Max.
Oh,
but
no,
I'm trying to say that, Spanners, I don't think you're going to complain about me bringing up Sergio Perez because it was a good result today. And I think this is the exact performance he needs to maintain that seat, is finish second to Max. No matter what you do, whether it's 45 seconds down the road, if you're second to Max every race, that's all you need to do.
Just be careful with the Perez slander, anyone. You saw what I did to Brad. I leaked it to the Daily Express, and it got quoted in a national newspaper. So I'll set the Express on you if you slag off Perez, Kyle.
I was semi going to back Perez up here. He did what he's supposed to do, and that was a solid Bottas, wasn't it? He did a nice solid Bottas.
That's not a compliment, right? I don't like it.
Or exactly what he needed to do. And that gap, as Jono said, was exasperated by Perez coming out into traffic and having to fight through some traffic. So that's what grew the gap. Whereas I don't think Verstappen had to actually battle through any traffic when he pitted because it was out in front already. Now, you could argue that Perez's mistake on lap 3, I think it was, when he went wide at Degner, and then he dropped out of the DRS toad, that made it. But I thought Perez was the most solid we've seen him for quite a considerable time.
Yeah, a good weekend for Perez, much closer. However, to bring everyone's, I know everyone probably trying to give everyone hope here that it's going to be closer. If you look at Max's qualifying lap, he wasn't pushing a lot. It was very conservative through Spoon Corner, where he'd actually been going very close to getting an off track there and been struggling with. And then when it came to race day, he just completely had the pace, quite evidently. Perez pushing to stay close with Max, went off at Degner 2, just under the bridge, and then could never recover from that position. And yes, he came out in traffic, but that's because his pace wasn't up to par with Max, who just had him covered off all weekend. It's positive. On one hand, it's positive to see Perez a lot closer and not make sure that, look, Max still needs to be on it. because otherwise Perez would be there to reap the rewards. However, he still finished 12 and a half seconds ahead at the end of the race of his teammate.
And you don't, obviously you don't know how much Verstappen is saving at that point once you get into 10 seconds ahead. Although what I will say is in that normal phase where previously Verstappen's been at will, just pulling 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds at the beginning of the race, it didn't quite seem like that. He was inching away. And so you could point to, you see, in Perez's defense, I can point to several mistakes that made it look worse than it is. So yeah, obviously had a moment at Degna early on, and then that drops him back into traffic. And in the at the end of the day, he didn't secure pole. But on that pole lap, I know what stuff he's saying, but also in Perez's defense, he made mistakes in sector one and perhaps had to compromise himself a little bit at Spoon or got distracted by George Russell. So it's not much of a defense, Scott. I'm just saying that if we want to play the mitigating factors game, overall, he still did look closer.
Yes, definitely. And I think Perez arguably could have got pole position if it wasn't for those mistakes. And in defense of Perez as well, but positive for Perez, he did state in the post-qualifying interviews, they said, where has his performance come from? He seemed to be doing much better. And he went, as a certain Carlos Sainz quotes, we stopped inventing, which I think is him tinkering around with the setups and so forth. So he's just, I think, yeah, mentally he's probably... I think he's in that Bottas era now, where it took Bottas a few years to admit that he wasn't on Lewis Hamilton's level. And I think Perez is now giving it a couple of years to try and take it to Max and now realises what his role in the team is and just try and...
You can't just throw around accusations. I like Bottas now because of that one advert, and I'm already disappointed for when the next thing he does like that isn't quite as good, and we all go... Oh, it wasn't quite as good. But you can't just go throwing around accusations like that, that he's the to Hamilton's Bottas or Verstappen's Bottas. I think that this proves that he is now trying to drive more like Sergio Perez. So the thing we heard from the shop floor was that Perez was trying to be, let's say, well, my setups are never going to get as close to Verstappen, so I need to drive it exactly like Verstappen. And it sounds like maybe he's given up on that. There was an interesting comment after qualifying where Perez on the radio to Horner said, that's the kind of, now you know the motivation I need. And Horner said, yes, I've always known. So what was it? What was the motivation he gave him? And Kyle, the most important thing is, do they need to, they've obviously sabotaged Verstappen a little bit. Do they need to do it more?
They may well have sabotaged Verstappen. I don't believe that for a second, by the way. it's just ludicrous. I think while they may be getting closer is there's an age-old adage, which is you win at the slowest pace possible. And I think Max, particularly after his retirement last weekend, I think he may have been turning his engine down a bit and not really pushing it too hard. Scott said, on his quali lap, he didn't look like he was pushing too hard. He knows he's got an advantage. Why win by 30 seconds when he can win by 10 even and save some of those power unit components? But for Perez, being motivated, I don't know. What is it? Mass scandals of your team management in the press motivates you? I don't know. What's changed? What's changed?
Well, the good news is for Perez's pace was in qualifying, I think it was around, it was less than a tenth. I don't know the exact gap, but it was pretty good. Today, on average in the race, he was around about 2.5 tenths slower than Max, which I think, and you look at F1 history, when you have a dominant five-star driver who's arguably could be one of the greatest of all time, if not, considered top 20, the level of Max. I think if you're 2.5 tenths off, I think you're doing a great job as a number two. I think that's a respectable gap. That's what we've seen in history. It's what we've seen the Bottases do, the Barrichellos, and going back and so on. So I think today is a good step for him. But can he do this in China in 2 weeks? Can he do it at Imola? Can he do it in Miami? Can he do it in Monte Carlo? That's the question.
Could he do it on a soggy Wednesday at Sheffield United? That's the the age-old question. So, yeah, obviously, I have my optimism for Perez and going, well, he was nearly reaching the minimum standard, and then me celebrating that is incredibly hypocritical, because when we talk about Logan Sargeant and everyone's celebrating that time that he was behind his teammate once, on track, achieving the minimum. So I'm very much guilty of that, I'm aware. But he seemed happier. It was undoubtedly, he's undoubtedly closer to being consistently second this season. So I'm going to carry a little bit of optimism forward. Don't take it away from me, not just yet. Ferrari! We wouldn't normally just chunk down the grid in race finish order, but it does seem to make sense today. Absolutely fascinating from the Ferrari garage, cars. I mean, Carlos Sainz on fire again. There's a bit of argument in the live chat as to whether Leclerc actually had a good race or not. And organisationally, the thing I found most fascinating was both drivers still called the strategy. So whilst everybody's saying, oh, they're better now, and the strategy's better and everything's calmer and Fred Vasseur is making things a steady ship, both drivers still dictated the strategy, Jono. So maybe the drivers have just gotten better at doing the strategy from the cockpit.
It would help for sure. It would help going into next year. Is Lewis good at strategy? That's the question, personally, because he'll have to do that next year.
This is so weird. If you want to talk about that, just as a brief diversion. So Lewis Hamilton's pit crew doesn't actually seem to listen to him. So he accepts the decisions, complains about it afterwards, which is kind of a great position to be in, because you just, you know, if it goes well, you take the credit. If it goes badly, you go, hey, guys, you know, I saw this coming from a mile off.
Well, if he's going to be his own strategist next year, then maybe
he's preparing. You know, go on, Scott.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Oh, yeah, go, Scott.
Sorry, just to add to that, that's a good point, because Lewis said they came on the radio and went, how are the tyres, Lewis? And he was like, yeah, no, they've got like, the hard tyres on the second stint. Yeah, they're still really good. This is after Georgia pitted to mediums. And then literally the next lap, they brought him in. Yeah. You're just thinking, why ask him how are the tyres if you're just going to do that anyway? Like, what's the point? Just tell him to come in.
They asked him at another point, they were talking about the strategy and he said, change the strategy. And then they didn't, but they didn't say we didn't. They just said, oh no, we're waiting for a pit window.
I think that was more frustration from Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, if you're a kid and your mother dresses you up in a suit that you don't like to go out, you're like, I'm looking like a Muppet here. I've got to say something, like, change this. Like, so I think that was more frustration from Lewis. And you know, when Mercedes asked him, how are the tyres? And he said, yeah, they're good. I don't think the stopwatch was saying that they were good, which is probably why Mercedes still brought him in. He was still losing off. And Toto said that at the end of the race. He was like, yeah, we just started to drop off. So they may have felt good, but I don't think the stopwatch was saying they're good.
Okay, put a pin in that, because we did start off with the Ferrari guys. So we had basically Leclerc trying something different. He was a little bit further behind and probably the only driver that made that one stop work. And if he's calling his strategy, the thing they really messed up on that is that they lost tons of time fighting toward that. That second stint was mega. Was he on mediums still on that second stint where he eventually got caught by? No, was he on hards?
No, he was on hards. Yeah.
I thought he was on mediums on that stint.
Well, it Leclerc would be made easier if the tyre graphic was sent at this stage of the race, but we don't have it yet because we're so early.
Sorry, Carl.
Leclerc started on mediums and went further than the people did on hard. So was an incredible stint. And, you know, kudos to the Ferrari pit wall. They stayed calm. They didn't make any rash decisions. They let the guy in the driving seat kind of call the shots on how it was. And Leclerc managed absolutely beautifully to go from P8, I think he was on the grid, to jump everyone to go up to P4. And it could have been P3 at one point. So that was actually a really, really, really strong race. So Paddy in the live chat said, I can't see how that was a strong race from Leclerc. Like, I thought that was a really, really strong and managed race with better tyre wear than just about everyone else. And if you would have said that last year, nobody would have believed you. The Ferrari's been traditional for munching its tyres.
Yep.
So that was absolutely incredible. And it was kudos to the Ferrari pit wall and the strategist for actually letting it unfold and not panicking and pulling the pin too early and bringing him in. So that was a masterful drive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think credit has to go to the pit crew as well, because Charles got in and out sharpish and got out right in front of George Russell as he was being caught by Lando Norris. So it importantly gave Charles that clean air on fresh rubber to get ahead of George Russell and build that gap to Lando, which Lando could then just never close down. He just stayed like a consistent two seconds behind. So yeah, it was great for him. I think they had to try and do something a little bit outside the box. If they tried to just go like match the cars ahead, strategy for strategy, like for like, it wouldn't have maybe worked for him as well as it did, say, for Carlos Sainz, because he would have had to have overtaken Lando, like the Mercedes, Alonso. Yeah. So he would have had to have overtaken like four or five cars out on track. So it was a good management drive from Charles, but most of it was, I think, the four positions gained for him getting driver of the day is a little bit kind of false. I don't think it was driver of the day.
I hate that. I hate it, because when someone qualifies badly, which Leclerc did, and he looked completely lost, and then they make up places, they then bag that driver of the day. I think has Perez not got the most driver of the days for precisely that reason?
I think that award lost credibility the first race it was introduced when Rio Haryanto won it after finishing last. So I don't think I ever want to talk about driver of the day ever again.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It was a good glimpse for the future for Ferrari. And we'll go back to the sort of nitpick a bit of the race in a sec. But what I'm trying to allude to here is, as Kyle said, they've always been notoriously known the last few years for struggling with tyres. They've had an engine which is really powerful in qualifying, and they can only develop reliability. Now, this team is starting to slowly start to, like, where are the flaws in Ferrari at the moment? Apart from not being the quickest team, they're second quickest. That's kind of the only flaw I see in Ferrari right now. You know, there's not much flaws in this team, and there's a reason why they're second best, because Red Bull are just too good.
So we're sort of focusing on the recovery drive from Leclerc there, and fair enough. I mean, decent job, but it's like you said, stuffy. It's you can make a bit more of that out of it than because it looks more impressive. If he'd have qualified on the first two rows, you know, where would he have been then?
Yeah, the qualifying performance is a bit strange. I don't think they really have come out and pinpointed exactly what Charles's issues were for that. But I was about to say, where is the weak points of Ferrari at the moment? Well, their weakest point is that they're letting their strongest driver leave at the end of the season.
No, I don't know. Are we doing this? Are we doing this? Okay.
Oh, yes. Yes.
No. Okay. I still think that's wrong. Okay. So he's had a couple of good races. Do we not believe this is more down to Leclerc having had a bad couple of races? What was the race where in Saudi he had brake issues? Yeah.
Bahrain.
Okay. Well, in Australia, he looked a little bit lost, and genuinely, you say Ricardo Sainz looked like the better driver. You know, today, having had a qualifying deficit, is that enough to now suddenly overturn 2 years and go, Carlos Sainz is a better driver, a better prospect, the wrong driver to let go?
Might be in jest. However, Carlos Sainz, as I said on the previous podcast,
I thought you were serious.
As I've said on the previous podcast, Sainz has improved year after year after year at Ferrari. And he is now in a mental state where he knows, I'm going out there to prove everyone at Ferrari wrong and to prove to everyone on the grid that I still deserve a place here next season, definitely on, at least in a top team. Who knows where that'll be? I don't know. It'd be a travesty if he's not on the grid next season. But there's 3 races he's raced in this year. He's beaten Charles. The timing sheets don't lie. He pretty much was, I think, comfortably quicker than Charles this weekend. And I know you mentioned, Charles has had one poor qualifying performance, whatever. Qualifying is now more important than it's ever been because of how tight it is at the top. There's a couple attempts can take you from 9th to 3rd. And that can be the difference between your race performance at where you finish on a race weekend. So, yeah, I mean, Carlos is doing it. And if he continues on even further, you have to start putting your hands up and going, do you know what? Maybe they've put their cards...
Right, they haven't. They've made the right choice. If they were going to get rid of OneDriver, they've made the right choice. Kyle, this would be my argument, is if Leclerc strung a weekend together, Ferrari are going to have a stronger overall performance than the maximum Carlos Sainz weekend.
That you've just made the point there.
Oh, sorry.
For me. If Leclerc string a weekend together. And we have seen repeatedly that he tends to be a bit of a choker, unfortunately. Like, he does tend to make these little mistakes and kind of goes off. And we've seen it again today. And in qualifying, when the pressure's on, Leclerc's amazing, but he does tend to make these mistakes. And Sainz hasn't. You know, look, last year at Singapore, when the opportunity presented itself, it was Sainz that grabbed it with both hands and was bulletproof and took it. And it was Leclerc sort of fumbling around where he kind of shouldn't be. And we've seen this more and more and more. So, yeah, I'm kind of inclined to agree. I think Ferrari are maybe thinking, oh, we've maybe sacked the wrong one here. But Leclerc, as I said, is a Ferrari child through and through, isn't he? So, as I said on the previous podcast, they've gone with their actual child and they've got rid of the adopted one, which I don't think is the right decision at the moment.
Excellent. If there's no more points on Ferrari, I think Jono had a little one to get in on. But no, we'll move on down the grid then, because McLaren looked just beautifully strong. This was a high tyre wear track, and like Ferrari, they didn't disappear, but we did see the difference in the tyre wear management between Piastri and Lando Norris. But what was interesting was Piastri said in the post-race interviews, yeah, we struggled on the tyres. So I don't know if that's just common because they talk about their side of the garage, but Norris didn't struggle on the tyres. Norris was looking absolutely fine on the tyres. So Catman was messaging in our group, Jono, that he's angry because he feels like McLaren cost Lando Norris a podium today.
It's arguable. It could be a chance. I don't think they did, but I think there was a possibility where they unnecessarily covered George Russell. When I heard that radio message, I was very surprised. Why do you need to cover George Russell in a Mercedes at all?
Yeah.
You know, so that was very puzzling. And Norris after the race also questioned it. He also said, I don't know why, you know, we bothered covering George. I can't remember the exact quote, so I'm not going to quote him. But that certainly had a part to play in it all. I think Piastri, another thing we must consider today is, I think he had more of a glimpse of Fernando Alonso's rear than anyone else in the race. It seemed like every time I sort of wanted to focus on where's Piastri going and how's he doing, and he seemed to be behind Alonso once more. So I also think that had a bit of a factor to play too.
I actually think that was a bit of a weak performance from Piastri. I mean, the gap at the end was quite large. It was like over 10 seconds, I believe, to think, but it was the first stint. I actually wrote that in my notes. I was like, well, the pit stop windows could be opening up and the gaps here, because Piastri's being really weak on this stint and falling behind. And yeah, Alonso, before he hit the cliff on the soft tyres, he had like 2-3 seconds, I think, on Piastri. So it's a bit disappointing. We have seen this Piastri being a bit weaker on tyre wear, and he said himself. So it's a shame to see that still happening. I'd like to see that go away and him pushing Norris more. But at the moment, it's very much one-sided in the McLaren garage.
Scott?
Yeah, this was Piastri's worst race last year as well. It's quite a high loaded circuit, Suzuka. It's very hard on the tyres. That's why it's always generally a standard kind of, I think, 2-stop race. So we know, and Piastri probably knows, it's definitely the weakest part of his game at the moment. He needs to improve in his tyre management. And yeah, he got found wanting this weekend. So it's tough on a circuit where you need to, you're trying to push, you're trying to obviously get past a fiery Fernando Alonso, but while you're trying to manage your tyres at the same time, just wasn't able to do so.
All right, well, let's get Norris out of the way, because he had sort of the least eventful of the two. Like, Lando Norris, yet another like commanding team leader, absolutely no doubt. I'm Mr. McLaren. I can run my stint. I can be fast. I can qualify well. And, you know, it just yet another notch on the tree for Lando Norris. I don't think there's any argument there. And I'm not a massive Lando Norris fan. And I've wondered if someone's going to come along and quote unquote find him out. But yeah, he's dispatched Ricciardo now. Now he's settled in. Then he's really looking, making Wonder Kid Piastri look a little bit average, if I'm honest. And that's not going to be popular, because I jumped on the Piastri hype train last season. I jumped on board too early before we started seeing the patterns, you know, with the tyre wear. But with Piastri as well, sneaking in, like, little mistakes, you know, creeping in. So that it was a mistake that allowed Russell to get close to him in the first place. He did make mistakes towards the end of the race in the Australian Grand Prix as well. He he had a little off. So it's all starting to sort of add up to a slightly less positive thing. But he did make contact with George Russell, so we have to ask,
whose fault is it?
Yay, we get to play it again. Is it me, or are the drivers getting a little bit more sensible wheel to wheel at the moment? So we're actually having less and less of these whose faults is it? I don't know why, Kyle. I don't know why that is.
Well, maybe since 2001, where I think everybody lost any perspective yeah. of what was actually correct and or right. Yeah. 2021. Like, yeah, everyone lost any perspective of what was actually right or wrong. And then Piastri in this one, I think that was absolutely fair. That was perfect. George dive bombed him, left him pretty much no room, wasn't ahead at any time. And that is the perfect comparison to Abu Dhabi lap one. Abu Dhabi 2021, yeah. lap one, where Verstappen did that dive bomb. And there's so many people on Twitter saying it was out of order. Hamilton jumped the chicane. Yeah. You can't just dive bomb someone, leave no room, force them off the track. And I haven't seen many murmurings or anybody complaining about this, really. It was absolutely fair enough. And that was pretty much identical. So I'd like to, some of the toxic Twitter rivalries that we see and stuff like that, I think they should be squashed, because this is pretty much exactly the same. And it just goes to show the double standards that are being applied.
I want to linger on that, because obviously there was Camp Hamilton and Camp Verstappen all through 2021. Huge arguments over, say, Silverstone and Monza, which was, you know, a bit more contentious, and you could make the case one side or the other. But when it came to that Abu Dhabi one, that is the most stupid argument that I've heard from the Verstappen fans camp, if you're trying to justify, if your driver's under attack constantly, that they're not the rightful champion, I can understand how that can be a bit triggering. So you look for all sorts of things. But yeah, that being forced off track, and then obviously you keep the place if you're forced off track and you need to cut that chicane. That is why chicanes are terrible. I hate that. If safety wasn't an issue, I would say just, you know, have a pit at the end of every chicane. Or a brick wall. But this is why I hate the racing around chicanes. But it seems perfectly reasonable that if that move is deemed a little bit over the line and you've forced someone off. And that this isn't the classic running them up wide on the exit, which is now allowed. That's sort of a contact that was fully within the track, and Russell's just over-egged it, hit him, Piastri's taken to the exit and then been allowed to keep the place.
That was a dive bomb through and through. But for what it's worth, I actually think that was a good attempt by George. He kind of sold the dummy, went up the inside. And if he'd left more than half a car's width more, that's all he needed to leave. He would have just got it stopped. I think it would have been fine. I think he would have had, Piastri would have had to give him the place back. Yeah. But if you actually look where he got to, he left probably one third of a car, if that, on the outside. And that's where he fell down. But no criticisms for George. I mean, fair play for having a go.
Yeah. Johnny.
Unfortunately, breaking news, once again, the stewards have deemed no one's at fault,
Boo.
Which I disagree with, Spanners, because we're doing the whose fault is it.
Okay, go on then.
It's 100% George's fault.
Yeah.
No. But as Kyle said, you know, it was impressive, and I think credit to George for making an entertaining move. You know, I'm a big fan of Australian supercars. You know, I watch supercars a lot, and in the rule book, they encourage, it literally says word for word, vigorous door-to-door racing. I didn't write that, but anyway,
nice.
It's in there.
Awesome. I like
and
it.
So, you know, I kind of enjoy a little bit of light wheel-to-wheel contact in Formula One.
Yeah, but
so
if you're a George Russell fan, though, and you've seen him in very recent history going off with last lap overtakes, and you see him approaching Piastri towards the end of the race, you are going like, oh, no, maybe we just settle for staying behind Piastri this time, George. So a little bit of heart-in-mouth moment. But yeah, no, I'm not disputing the fact that that's good racing. Go for that move. Completely. But Kyle, I was with you. The first thing I thought about was, where's the outrage? Where's the outrage for Piastri getting to keep that position? But yeah, all good. But ban all chicanes and this won't be a problem.
The other thing I want to mention is it was a little bit of, I don't want to say poor decision-making by George, but risky decision-making. You've got plenty of time and plenty of laps and corners to pass Oscar Piastri. And he left it down to the final lap after that. He only got him on lap 53 into turn one.
Yeah.
So it was risky, you know. He could have just waited and got the move done. And if there was one lap less in the race, he wouldn't have nabbed seventh position. So very lucky that George got away with it.
Yeah, unfortunately, Piastri got the fisicellas going on to the final lap into the chicane from that race in 2005, where Fisichella decided to defend clean air and give Kimi the run. Like, Piastri wasn't defending clean air, but yeah, that mistake, and you could see how downbeat he was in the interview after. He's absolutely kicking himself. Now, had that not happened and George would have stayed behind, I still think we'd be criticising Piastri for a bit of a weak race, because the gap to Norris was huge. but yeah, we'd be criticising him slightly less.
Mm. I mean, if you come in as a rookie, you know, you can either go in against someone beatable. I mean, this is the same in all teams. Who do you want? Do you want to go up against Logan Sargeant and everyone's praising Albon this season? Or do you want to test yourself at the very best, against the very best? So it could be that he is just up against one of the very top drivers right now in only his second season, Kyle.
We are seeing as if it's Piastri's first season again. It's a shame we are seeing this, but just quickly, and I think this might be the first time I ever get to say this, Logan Sargeant, before that Williams botched pit stop, was actually having a really, really good race. And he was on, and he looked like he was going to score points for the first time. Okay. And then it all came unraveled. So I'd just like to say a little positive Logan Sargeant.
Oh, we can skip to Williams. We were just about finished with McLaren anyway. So people, the Eagle flags were being unfurled a little bit early by the American fans, and there's Logan Sargeant fans there, and you know they want their countrymen to do well, not begrudging that at all, but the shame is that we don't know how good he actually was doing, because we were robbed of seeing a reference point with Albon. So whenever there's one driver in a race, it's always hard to tell, did they get the most out of it? Because you could look at the McLaren today, if Norris had a first lap incident, and you could go, Piastri dragged that up to P8 or whatever. Yeah, he's done well to drag that to P8. That McLaren looked like a pig today. Could not preserve its tyres. Whereas it looks like a front-running championship car in the hands of Lando Norris. So we didn't get to see. Albon could have been running P7. So just want to dampen down the praise a little bit, because ruin it, why not?
Well, that's where Logan should have gone to his post-race interviews and been like, I've been to Fernando Alonso Media School. Oh, that was a world championship drive today.
Best drive I've ever had. Yeah. Wrung its neck out, Scott.
I mean, okay, I'm just going to bring it back down a bit here for Logan Sargeant. He did still bin it in practice after all of the media talk of everyone on social media going, oh my God, it was so bad that they took that car away from him. Then bins it, and then the social media defense of him was just the most ridiculous thing in the world, of people blaming the car and not him. Can't go fast enough around a corner, then don't do so.
The big defense I saw, Scott, I think the one that we both saw, was just a random on Twitter saying, oh, they can't give him a car that doesn't understeer. It understeered, therefore it's not his fault.
They basically just pointed out what understeer is. They're like, look at him turning left and the car still going straight. And it's like, well, he's clearly going too fast for that corner. That is understeer. And then secondly, the guy nearly binned it again in the race. So a bit of more of a positive, because he stopped it from going in the barrier at Degner 2.
With Degner 1, I think. But it would have been better if he did.
It would have been better, because it would have given us some late drama with a safety car. In fairness to him, I know how he feels, because I've done that numerous times on iRacing. But overall, just still not a great weekend for him, I don't think.
It was Degner 2, sorry.
So it's just, he's not doing, I don't know, he's just not doing what needs to be done of him. And I'd be surprised if he's in that seat by the end of the year.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was mid-season. Like, to go and make the changes.
Well, that's what Joe says.
Something out. The crash he had, well, non-crash he had at Degner's, was that was fair play for managing to reverse onto a live track into a gap. That must have been scary. But the practice track crash is unforgivable, absolutely unforgivable. Same like Albon's was. When they know that there's lack of spare parts and no chassis, why on earth will you be taking a risk and pushing so hard? So when he was understeering through Dunlop, he kept his foot in right up to the grass. And sorry, I don't know where I was on the track is not an excuse.
Well, that was what James Vowell said.
Formula One driver.
James Vowell said. I know. What it looked like was, it looked like there was, before the service road, there's curb and a little bit of that green type of tarmac. And then, so he was on that. On the other side of the surface road, it's just grass. So he drove as if the curb was going to continue, and it didn't.
ish, but why on earth are you putting the car in that situation when there's a lack of spare parts, you know, and you've only just got a repaired chassis? And I think why he ended up on that curb was he actually had a bit of a snap of oversteer. If you look at the onboard, he had a tiny little snap of oversteer, but kept his foot in and went wide. So for me, that was just needlessly reckless in FP1 as well. What are you going to achieve by finishing 17th instead of 18th in FP1 or wherever you were on that push lap? It was just mind-numbingly silly, in my opinion.
It wasn't even a corner. He crashed on a straight. Is Dunlop curve even a corner? Come on, it's full throttle. No, it's a straight. It's
debatable. I think anyone who's played any sort of video game or particularly iRacing has crashed at Dunlop corner. It's a very tempting corner because you think if I'm not flat out, I'm going to lose time, and it's continually pushing you out and out and out. And because it's just grass and not runoff, it punishes you a lot. So
I will. This is a very tough thing to say right now, but I will defend Logan in that sense because it is, if you've never driven Suzuka in a sim, even on a video game, just grab any type of video game, just go to Suzuka. It is a proper corner. Like, you cannot see what's over the top.
You just said it's
not
a straight.
No, I was tongue-in-cheek, man.
It's a really difficult corner. It's a very difficult series of corners, to be honest. So he's lost it on two of the hardest corners on the circuits because the Degners want to eat you. The Degners want you in the wall.
And to do another throwback, because Carl's been spot on with the throwbacks today, by the way, but 2009 F1 qualifying, we hadn't been to Suzuka in, I don't know, about 3-4 years. And we had like 4 or 5 red flags at the Degners. So yes, another difficult corner following
Kvyat.
Up.
Was that not Kvyat had that big, big role?
That was 2015.
Oh, was that 2015?
Because I was there.
This is why you win at quizzes. I hate you so much. No, that was 2015. Nerd, touch grass, Scott.
I will just add as well, referring back to Logan, to Carl's point, there's a time to prove yourself when you've got the pace, and that's in qualifying and in the race. To do it in practice is just unforgivable. It's a time not to push. If you can see the car is understeering and you're struggling through that corner, port it back to the pit lane. Go, I'm struggling through here. We need to change something with the car and the setup. To crash it in practice like that is... it's just not good enough. Wait. In the race, you could be a little bit more forgiven, although we'd still be very critical because of how his previous form has been.
Okay, but why Albon crashed in Melbourne in free practice?
That's just as bad. If they know, those two drivers, that they do not have enough spare parts, there is no reason for them to be pushing as hard in practice. You dial it. I know they're racing drivers, and every time when they get in that car, they want to go as fast as possible. Just dial it back a touch. Like, there is a point in qualifying and in the race, so be it, but not in practice.
And the good news is James Vowell says the car looks repairable, so there is some positivity there.
But they're not going to bother because what's the point?
Well, that's true, exactly. I saw a very funny meme on Twitter of somebody who, there was like a glitch in a game. I don't know what they did. And there was just a person sitting in an invisible car. They're going to have to drive an invisible car next round or something. But look, all the major upgrades they bought have been destroyed in 2 rounds. You know, that's just not normal in Formula One, especially for a team that's fighting for a budget here. So good luck to them.
So people were getting excited. And this is one of my big bugbears about, you know, people having really low bars for claiming success. And for some whatever reason, it happens with the buy-in drivers, and I am definitely classing Logan Sargeant as a buy-in driver. Not that there's anything wrong with that kind of thing inherently, but I never understand why the bar for calling success is so low. So him running 12th, people were lining up the I told you so's, and here he is, and this proves that he could do that. People were getting massively carried away mid-race. And yeah, he might have picked up a result. He might have been in a better position without a slightly delayed pit stop, but in the end he did end up binning it anyway, and even a point, one single point, wouldn't have erased, you know, those opinions. So you can celebrate it, but I'm saying let's have the bar a little higher for success, you know, and this will, you know, come up again when we talk about Aston Martin and Lance Stroll. But let's move sadly on to Mercedes, and I'm glad we've delayed it because it's just depressing. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan, and by default have been a Mercedes fan as part of that. And now every time I see them on the grid with different tyres to other people, I just hang my head and go, why? It's never the case that they have an alternate tyre strategy and it works. So every time I see them on a different tyre, I just hang my head.
I actually defend them. I thought that that was initially, I think I put it in the group, like, I think that could be a really good move by Mercedes. And look, they knew they weren't great on pace. They were starting, what was it, 7th and 9th. And they had to do, they had the opportunity opened up to do something different. And they took it to try to launch themselves up the grid. Leclerc did something different, albeit in a better way, and got himself from P8 to P4. So fair play. And, you know, I think when they're on the back foot like this, I think they are just taking some gambles and rolling the dice to try and fluke a result. I think they know they're not in a position to get a strong result on genuine pace alone.
Yeah, we've been super critical of Mercedes for being too cautious for a number of years because of the dominance that they had, and that they could make a botched pit stop and they'd still come out X amount of seconds ahead. So I think it was quite refreshing to see them try it. Of course, it just quite clearly didn't work. Lewis reported he had some damage because when Leclerc overtook him and got some understeer. I don't know how true that is, hence why he let Russell pass. But I thought it was quite refreshing, and it's nice to see them, especially when we know they don't have the outright pace. They were never going to, if they matched McLaren for strategy, they might have had a go at Piastri. Well, they did end up having a go at Piastri, but they might have had a go at Piastri. They would have got stuck behind Alonso, both of them still.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Scott. So what you're saying is they had no chance of, on the same strategy, racing their two customer cars that were ahead of them. So they had to go for a Maverick alternative strategy to try something different. And we're not meant to criticise that.
No, we are meant to criticise that. They've made a poor car. Their car is not up to scratch to McLaren, Ferrari, and definitely not Red Bull. And that is the position we're talking about Mercedes in now. The 8 times Constructors' Champions, the dominant team of the last decade, are no longer that team. They have dropped the ball massively in this regulation set. And that's why Lewis Hamilton probably just doesn't look too as dejected as he is, because he knows he's on the way out at the end of this season. And his car, his seat for next year, his team, are doing really well. So take what may with Mercedes at the moment. It pains me to say, as a long-time Mercedes fan, but that's the position they're in.
Yeah, you know, we said this, I think, in a pre-season show, that they've changed their concept. They're essentially behind everyone else, maybe by like a year or two now. So they're trying to play catch-up. But, you know, by beating with their customer teams, they're kind of doing their Renault 2016 to 2020 impression, while they're getting thoroughly spanked by their customers. There's people supplying them engines and beating them convincingly. It just shows how much they've kind of lost their way. It's not quite as bad as the Renault situation. But yeah, they were always changing a concept like this wildly. They were always going to be on the back foot.
So why was Hamilton so bizarrely happy on Saturday? Best the cars that ever felt. This is great. I've stopped messing around with the setups. I've stopped tinkering. I've just focused on it. And he was happy with P7, and he was bouncing around going, this is brilliant.
Because whenever a Mercedes driver is quicker on Saturday, I have this theory that they're not quick during the race. I don't know what it is.
They have to
pick. Seems like, you know, Lewis has had great race pace to start the year, and all of a sudden we go, oh, he's finally on top of qualifying. He's out-qualified George. Nope, George is way quicker in the race. So there you go.
It's because of the low bar that they've got. The car has felt so poorly, but when the car feels nicely balanced, they're like, yay. But then Lewis comes on the radio and finds out that he's still half a second slower than Max Verstappen. And he's like, how? It's just, that is the position Mercedes is in. They have the power unit. Other teams are able to make use of that power unit. But with these ground effect era regulations, they've just don't know. Well, yeah, they're massively on the back foot and don't know what they're doing. And that's why it's these little wins feel so much bigger than they actually are, because they're mainly fighting against themselves rather than anyone else.
Okay, but Kyle, I still feel like a normal strategy would have worked better than the alt strategy. So they're rolling the dice because, what, they're not satisfied with... They could have finished ahead of... They could have beaten Alonso today, surely.
I don't think they could have, to be honest. They actually finished in the same positions they qualified in, albeit...
Switched.
Inverse, yeah. Albeit inverse, but that's why. And that just shows their confidence level, that they are just rolling the dice and throwing it of it. But being happy in that situation and stuff, as you alluded to earlier, you have to say kudos and fair play to Lewis Hamilton for actually suggesting to let his teammate through when he's struggling, especially when he's leaving the team. Well, no, it just shows that that he isn't out for himself, that he's not an arrogant driver doing that and doing stuff for himself. He's still got the team in mind. This is the team that's given him so much success in championships. And I still think he feels a moral obligation and a duty to do the best for the team. Now, I don't think all top drivers would have done the same there. I think they would have fought like tooth and nail and would have hurt all of them as a result. So I think that is massive kudos. And he, look, he's a huge champion. He's got everything to lose. He knows he'll probably be criticized for it. And he's still just like, yep, no, I'm going to move out of the way. I mean, that is somebody who can swallow their pride a bit and know when they are not very good and move over and not cause a mess. So fair play, in my opinion.
I don't think it was fair play. I think it was stupid. I'm not just taking the other side for the sake of it, I promise. Very frustrating in that if you look at the race pace, slightly, Hamilton had a little bit of pace. So if you look how he was able to close down those gaps on very slightly newer tyres, but he lost out on the undercut twice, you know, and he came out of the pits, I think one time 9 seconds behind, and then another time 6 or 7 seconds behind, and was able to sort of pull the gap back a little, generally doing faster race pace. What would have happened then if he'd have got the undercuts? What if he'd have got priority on the strategy? And so there you go. Well, okay, I'll let Russell pass if he's doing something different. If he doesn't want to save as much as I'm going to save, then okay, but then don't prioritize Russell on the strategy. So if you're really fighting, you don't let Russell go by. You get on the radio and you go, we're all saving tires here. Tell him we're saving tires. This is stupid. Why are we pushing? And then try and do that optimal. By just going, oh, Jalv, do you know what? Just let him go. I was so disappointed. Where's the fight? Where's the fight to get things done? And Russell, was he ultimately wrong? He's got previous. I think he did it in the last Japanese Grand Prix. He's got previous of this, of wanting to be let by, but then he's burning up his tyres. So I don't agree with it at all, Kyle. Let's have Jono and then Stuffy.
I agree with you, Spanners. And
good, moving on.
No, not that part. But it's not Lewis Hamilton. He is a fair and square racer. We saw it back in, it was about 5-6 years ago with Valtteri Bottas. Remember when Bottas let him past? And then normally what would happen there is you'd have a situation where he crosses the finish line, he goes, then you let Valtteri back at the final corner. Mm. And everyone went, well, what if you lose the championship by a point? Lewis goes, I'm going to win it fair and square. And I think what he notices is for him, as in his personality, he wants what's best for the team. He wants to win fair and square. And the counter argument to that, and this is where the part that I agree with you, Spanners, is the fact that I think he went a little bit too far with it today.
Don't come up with it yourself, Kyle.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, Stuffy, you've been waiting there.
Yeah, no, it was a little bit too. I don't know if I missed the first message, but I saw him ask for, "Oh, do you want to let George buy?" And I was thinking, excuse me? I didn't know. Supposedly it's because I think he was more admittant of it and asking of it because he had understeer. As I said, he supposedly in the interview afterwards said he picked up a bit of damage and was receiving understeer in his first in.
Okay, I missed that.
I don't know the level of that. I don't know if that's just an excuse because he was maybe not feeling comfortable with the car. But I just wanted to add as well in regards to letting teammates buy. You must be upset with Charles Leclerc also, because he very easily let Carlos Sainz.
He got told to do that. They said don't fight him.
What does it matter? This guy's out of the team at the end of the year. He doesn't have to listen to him.
The justification was not letting Norris catch up was the justification.
But still, I thought Charles would put up a little bit more of a defence there. But sorry, detracting away from Mercedes briefly.
That's fine.
On that, I don't think Charles did let him through. He went defensive. Sainz had to make the move. Charles didn't let him through. Charles went defensive and took the defensive line. He didn't back off. Like, Sainz very much had to make that move. But on the Lewis thing, I think that's even more kudos. The fact that he's recognised the situation. He can see George's mirrors and he knows he's struggling to even go to the team and say, guys, you know, I'm dying here. You know, I'm not doing very well here. Should I let George buy? And that is instantly a driver who is thinking of the bigger picture and not just thinking of himself. And that is such a rare virtue to have in a top F1 driver, and it is very, very rare to see. So I think that needs commending rather than criticizing.
For context, yes, I do. I like fairness as well. I have a strong sense of fairness as well, but not to your level, Kyle. For context, Kyle is a ridiculously fair Carter racer. You would also rather not win than shove someone into a wall.
Absolutely.
And
it's got to be done correctly.
And I've taken advantage of that. And I think I've put you on the grass a couple of times. Sorry.
Maybe, yeah.
it's all on video. I'll try and dig it up. If only we were mic'd up for your reaction. Yeah. Okay, but yeah, so yes, that sense of fairness is there. But yeah, definitely for me, too far today. To me, it shows he's not fighting for the championship at the moment. It doesn't feel like someone who was fighting would do that. So there's, and fine, you could say, well, there's no championship on the line. So what's he got to gain? Why fight? Because it's there.
We just,
why climb the mountain?
We just need to be careful because we're so soon after the race, right? Because Mr. Apex, we're first. And I definitely didn't get a chance to listen to the full radio context, you know, of this. Because sometimes you have to be careful. What if he was told for a couple of laps and that wasn't broadcasted? So we're talking about what was broadcasted to us. There's always a chance. I don't subscribe to F1 TV anymore, so I can't listen to it.
Lewis did say in his interview, as Scott said, he did say that, yeah, I was struggling. I couldn't turn the car, and that's why I let George by.
Okay.
So he knew he was really suffering badly, so he did it. So again, even more.
Well, that renders my rant sort of pointless, but I still stick by it. I still think his car obviously wasn't that damaged because relative to George, he still had good race pace for the rest of the stint and was able to make those gaps up. So even slightly hobbled. So in the moment, that might have made sense. But I think they'd have had a better race if they didn't make that swap. Who else have we got to cover here? Fernando Alonso. Jono, what are you pointing at, Jono?
No, I was going to suggest Yuki Tsunoda because Japanese driver to score home points. Or did I jump the gun on him? I think he... I mean, you know, like that is great. You know, since Kobayashi's podium, for a Japanese driver to score points, he did it so elegantly, so politely today, did Yuki Tsunoda score points. I think great job.
He's gone on a bit of a what do you call it, a reconciliation tour where they've tried to change his personality and how he comes across to the media. He did a big sit-down interview where he, admitted that it wasn't great behaviour. What he did to Ricardo, I didn't like that at all. But they've definitely gone on a charm offensive with Tsunoda to try and fix that. And yeah, he was much calmer on the radio. Stuffy.
Yeah, it was a mega drive from Tsunoda. He made some great overtakes round turn six. When he needed to. But also, I feel like it wasn't Yuki Tsunoda of old would have seen this race today. After Ricardo going out, he had an opportunity to put another nail in Danny Ricciardo's coffin, and he could have quite easily fumbled it like he has done in the past, but he didn't. He stayed level-headed. His team nearly screwed him over. He got massively undercut by those behind him, was out of position, but then there was this mega five-car pit stop, and the team
so good. Yeah.
Made him up two or three positions, and then he just defended valiantly from barraging Stroll, who just couldn't get past him. And then, forced Aston Martin to do something really wild and try a soft tyre to the end of the race. It was a great drive from Yuki and very different to what we saw in the first race of the season.
So as an enlightened Tsunoda fan, like I've always known that he's destined for goatness, right? But yeah, the concern has been the temperament. But even after that pit stop, he was all like, yes, I just want to say thank you very much to the pit crew. Please thank Dave on front left, Derek on front right, Isabel on back left. You know, just want to go. And it's John's birthday, so happy birthday to John. He was like full on, like, I'm a team leader now. But Carl, it could be that seeing the vulnerable Ricardo career-wise, someone's had a word in his ear and goes, do you know what? You're leading this team now. Come on, shape up.
Absolutely. And remember a few years ago, they actually moved him to Faenza. I think it was Franz Tost moved him under the watch of the team to sort his attitude out. And yeah, we saw some attitude in a race one. And the thanking his team. It's like, who is this? Personally, I think his trainer's been popping a couple of Valiums in his water bottle in the car to try and keep him calm during the race. Because this calmness and is starting to deliver results. And yeah, he is absolutely, well, he's pretty much almost, as much as it pains me to say it, I think he's ending Ricardo at the moment.
Yeah. Like, it's the finishing blow, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I think everyone expected him, Ricardo, to beat him and is not. He's really come to the fore. But I've been quite critical of Yuki because I didn't like the attitude. I didn't like the outburst. But now he's solved that. wow, okay, yeah, maybe he really does belong. And as you said, he's leading that team, and it's very impressive to see.
Well, everything went well today. It's super easy to be calm when everyone's giving me nice intros, but it's a little bit harder when people come in with like random intros at the start of the show, and I have to figure out what those mean. So the next time he's under pressure or Ricardo's ahead of him, let's see if he can keep that level head. Really difficult for Ricardo, because going into the race, you know, he was lots of talk about the chassis might be different. I'm telling them to check the car with a fine tooth comb. And then they even said, well, we are prepping a spare car, because it looks like Joe Saywood was right that not Williams weren't the only team without a spare tub, without a spare chassis. And I think now the team saw the ripping that Williams got, and they're all rushing to make sure they've got a spare chassis. So they go, well, we happen to have a spare chassis coming. We'll swap that out. It's just a coincidence, but we'll swap that out for China. But then Ricardo kind of ruined it by doing quite well in qualifying and only being just behind Tsunoda, which kind of puts that to bed, doesn't it? Because doesn't that kind of mean the chassis is fine?
Well, he wasn't ahead, was he? He was just slightly behind.
He was only just behind. So it's not a chronic fault, is it?
Yeah, there's been situations of the past where drivers have claimed, oh, I've got a cracked chassis, can you double check? And then engineers 3 weeks later go, oh, there is. Yeah, there is, let's replace it. There's also been stories that have come out and where drivers claim, hey, can you change this? I don't feel good. And the engineers don't change anything. And they say, yeah, we changed it. And then the driver goes 3/10 quicker. So it can also be mental, you know, with some drivers. I don't know the full in-depth on Ricardo's situation. If only I was given a press pass to go to every whatever it's called now, Visa Cash App RB sort of testing simulator session, and understood what's wrong there.
Yeah, let us in, and then we'll stop just making things up. Probably not.
One thing that was absolutely wonderful to see, and I love Yuki getting a point, and that is for the Japanese fans. Suzuka, I've been lucky enough to go there. What a race, and what amazing fans. Everyone is lovely. Everyone's fair. They're not trying to rip you off constantly. It's one of these absolutely amazing races to go to. It's beautiful. I've got many stories of just incredible kindness and just wonderful like things happening to me when I was there. And that is warm, fuzzy feeling territory for the home fans to see that. And shout out to MotoGP podcast panelist Adam Rosales, who is there and is watching this stream and commenting in the live thing whilst he's on a shuttle bus back from the circuit to Nagoya. So I hope he had a wicked time, and I hope he shared in some of that adulation from the home fans.
Well, I would check out Adam Rosales and Kyle Power and Danny Henney and Jules Sagers and Matt Trumpets on the Mist Apex MotoGP podcast. We'll make sure we get a link to those show notes. Also, the Japanese crowd is funny. There's always like good costumes. Isn't this the one where there was a guy that had a fully functioning DRS hat?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the best one was obviously a Tsunoda fan in sort of, you know, Red Bull, Toro Rosso colours. And then the camera went on him and he stripped it away to reveal Aston Martin colours and Aston Martin hat, because they're obviously all in on the rumours that he's going to go to Aston Martin at some point. Aston Martin, probably the last team I want to cover in any kind of depth. Really, a great performance, really. So they got the tactics right. Alonso drove good, and they seemed like a little bit punching above their weight with the Alonso car, Scott.
I was about to say, you did finish your sentence there and go, a great performance from Aston Martin, and then
yeah,
mention you said the Alonso car, because it was very two different ends of the spectrum for them. Because what was Lance Stroll doing? Not even getting out of Q1. What is that?
Well,
about?
The car lacked straight line speed, Scott, apparently.
Well, this is just from the telly, but apparently they put a little bit more downforce on Stroll's car to try and protect him from himself. I don't know. It feels like that's kind of the thing you would do in a Behrman situation. Give you the soft tyres to keep you out of the wall, give you a little bit of extra downforce to make sure, you know, you don't go into the Saudi, you know, death tunnel, the death S's. But I think that's what they've done with Stroll. They give him a bit more downforce to keep him on the track. But then he's screaming, if we still did the Pony Award, that would be undisputed. But yeah, screaming about this is he nearly said GP2 car or an F2 car, but he said this is a car from a different category.
Would you think he's I think he's definitely been learning some things from Fernando Alonso, that's for sure. It's a Fernando-Alonso-esque line, that, isn't it? But yeah, it's just Alonso, once again, defying age, doing really well in an Aston Martin Q3, fighting for top fives. And just, Yeah, great.
I'd love to know, though. We don't have something to compare him against. I think we can all agree with that. Stroll has been far away from showing him a challenge. So we don't really know how well Alonso's doing. It looks great.
I think for any driver who's into their 40s, all right. 43, so,
I don't like the way you said that.
He's even older than you, Spanners. Apologies.
No, he's not. How dare you? No, he's younger than me. Just.
Is he? Just. Yeah. Okay. For him to do that and to be leading that team on his own, fighting against the likes of Mercedes, McLaren, okay, not Red Bull, but to do that, I think he's showing it in himself. I don't think he necessarily needs a decent teammate to show how good he's doing. Because I think we can probably agree Aston Martin, even though Mercedes struggling, are probably on average still the fifth best car. So for him to be beating Mercedes and to beat a McLaren and to still be taking it like high up in Q3 consistently is really good performance from Alonso.
That was a very, very, very strong performance from Alonso, but we don't need a reference in the other car to gauge how good Alonso is going to be doing, because he will tell you himself. He will very much tell you how great he is. But that was another really strong performance, I think, from Alonso. I'd love to see where that car is with another top driver in it, but I think it's safe to assume that they'll be in and around where Alonso is, or maybe a little bit behind. I do think he is outperforming the car somewhat, because that gap to Stroll is monstrous.
It's mad. And you just go, at what point does Lance Stroll look at that and go, I've had enough? When there's no hope, which it looks like now, when there's no hope that he's going to close that gap, at what point does he go, does he say, I'm either happy, I'll just stay in F1 with that gap, or does he go, no, I'm just going to go and run the family business? But Alonso was accused by Russell of slowing up to give Piastri DRS in an attempt to stop Russell from going past. That wouldn't surprise me at all. That sounds very Alonso-y.
And Alonso responded and said, oh, I don't know what to say after Australia. Maybe they'll disqualify me from the championship.
Hello. Oh, hello. Maybe they'll just disqualify me like they always do. God, I'm the best one, but everyone hates me. I get all of the bad things and none of the good things. Yeah, you're right. He is absolutely savvy and great at playing the PR game. Let's move on to our awards. A quite nice Japanese Grand Prix. I enjoyed watching it. I wish it was on a little bit later. I nearly ran out of coffee, but I found it at the last moment. I found one capsule of my Nespresso, and it was like manna from heaven. That's why I've been able to get through the show. If you've got this far in the show, maybe you'd like to support us on Patreon. Thank you to everybody who's signed up this season and before. We are only here because of you. It's been really, really encouraging at a time when a lot of podcasts are just folding. I've seen so many of the bigger podcasts just sack it this year, put off by maybe their lack of competition or their dwindling numbers. But because we've got such a great community here, we're not close. We're not even close to thinking, even considering. There's not even a glimmer of pod fade in our eyes. And it's mainly down to you patrons. And you can support us and join them by going to patreon.com/missedapex. But if that's not for you, take the link that I'm going to put in the show notes. It's going to be the top thing, missedapexpodcast.com. Take that link, just share it with a couple of friends on your Facebook forum, on your Twitter, even if you've only got 10 followers, and just go, hey, after the race, I like tuning in to Missed Apex podcast. They will take your recommendation and try it. And that is the massivest, biggest help we could get. If everybody did that today, then we would shoot up the iTunes charts as well, because it favors new subscribers. So tell a friend or support us. In any case, stay with us for the week, because we're going to have a mailbag show in the week. I'm on holiday, so I'm handing over the keys to the crew, but they will answer your questions. Send them to feedback@missedapex.net. All right, we can start with the negative award so that we can end on a high. So,
oh no, you missed the apex.
Who missed the apex for you, Kyle Power?
I hate to say this, but Lewis Hamilton's performance again. So I think Lewis missed the apex for me. Again, it's the third weekend running. He's been outperformed in race.
So the damage isn't
by George.
The damage isn't a factor for you.
I'm dubious whether there was damage. I didn't see any contact, and with Toto didn't allude to it. The team hasn't said it. Lewis just seems a bit lost in his performance at the moment. So it's really sad to see. I'm a Hamilton fan, but you know, I'll say it as I see it, and I thought that was particularly weak.
Somebody sent me a photo of the alleged damage, and it really didn't look like anything. You know, we've seen cars lose end plates, and look, Magnussen drives with no end plates most of the time. So, so it shows it can be done. So, yeah, I'm not particularly buying that as well. And I just felt so despondent at the suggestion that George go by. But look, if that's his biggest flaw is that he's quite nice and fair and a team player, then I can't complain too much. I was just disappointed. I'm going to go next, actually, because I've just thought of it. Kevin, I'm going to give it to Kevin Magnussen, my Missed Apex Award, for the weaving. And then... In Spoo, if you're going to weave anywhere, Kyle, maybe not through 130R.
Well, he was on the lead up. Bottas wasn't anywhere near him to make a pass, and he made one change of direction on the straight. We have seen others, Max, do much, much, much worse. And also, but Kevin Magnussen is a menace. I do believe he's a menace. And if you hark back to 2019 when he did this to Leclerc and Leclerc went into the back of him and showed off his amazing grasp of the English language by his famous quote of Magnussen is and will always be an idiot, which is quite amazing when you're in a car to do that. So yeah, this time I actually think that was nothing bad. Magnussen did nothing wrong in my opinion.
It sort of feels like it's cumulative because I've celebrated his defensive driving. At some point I have to give him the Missed Apex for being a menace, but I don't really want him to change, if you put it that way. If you go, right, should tone it down, Kevin? No, what's the point? He's getting towards the end of his career. You have to say the seat's vulnerable. Why not? Give it some beans. Stuffy, you are... Oh, sorry, I meant to say it's Kyle. Follow Kyle at Kyle Power F1 and go and check out the MotoGP podcast. He's the host and it's all right. I can't tell. I don't know. You might be chatting rubbish. I haven't got a clue about bikes. Stuffy, you are on YouTube. Let's plug your YouTube because you're watch-alongs. I'm not competing with them. I've given myself a no-compete with Stuffy clause. And you're too big anyway now. How can people watch your live race watch-alongs?
And you can follow me on YouTube at Stuffy. So
you have to spell it.
Spelling will be in the description below. Go check me out there. Do the live watch alongs for alternative commentary and track map data and stuff. Not your usual watch along jazz.
I forgot to ask you actually, you're the latest on our roster of iRacing commentators as well. So I'm hoping that you might do the next round for us.
Yeah, just need to confirm availability for that. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed doing the last round with Chris.
It was great. I really enjoyed it too. Watch race two. I'll put a link to that as well. Race two, because I was in it and I got a podium. I was really happy. So who missed the apex for you?
Missed the apex for me was the Stake F1 pit crew. Once again, another slow...
Is it their fault though?
Yes, it was totally their fault. They just couldn't get all four tyres on the car quick enough. And Bottas... I think he was leading the pack, ended up in that 5-car pit stop, which was amazing, ended up coming out like second last. So he lost like 3 or 4 positions, which ruined, unfortunately, a very good weekend for Valtteri Bottas because he was clearly outperforming that Stake F1 car. And just unfortunately, that car just doesn't have enough in it to get past a weaving Kevin Magnussen.
I want to defend the actual mechanics on the ground, though, because it feels like they've really got a fundamental issue because it's all the time. The TV comms was celebrating a 4-second pit stop as a success. They've definitely got some kind of equipment problem there. It can't just be that the pit crew's inept.
Possibly, but still, nonetheless, they're losing time, considerable time in the pit stops. And that potentially, I wouldn't say Bottas would score points because Yuki was very good today, but their highest position in the season thus far.
Jono F1, Jono from the telly, Jono from Australia, a reporter of all things. Lucky to have a man of your calibre here, and you didn't end up, you know, in the darkened corridors of radio like me, because you have a face that fits with the camera world. Go and follow Johnny at Jono, Johnny S8.
Yes, correct. JONNYESS8. I can happily say for the first time now, I'm over at 10 News Melbourne, which is great. Moved back home from Cairns, which means I don't have to fly down for my own home Grand Prix anymore next year, which is going to be awesome. But on a bad note, somebody missed the apex today. And I will give it... Is it too easy to give it to Lance Stroll? No, I don't want to give it to Stroll. He gets it too many times, unfortunately. Yeah. And I know Oscar Piastri is going to listen to this. And so I am using this as a motivational miss the apex to Oscar Piastri to say, Oscar, you're off rhythm for one round. Make this be the last time you've missed the Apex in your Jono's Apex on the Map podcast. No more, Oscar. I want you to improve your performances.
Okay. Well, since you're Australian and he's Australian, if you want to say it in Australian, you're more than welcome.
Yeah. Blimey, hopping,
galah.
You know, roo roo, galah. Oh, yeah. Something like that. I got to know how to speak Australian, mate.
That didn't go wrong. Let's go on to the, that went wrong. Let's go to the other award. It's the thing of the weekend. Oh, we get to end all positive now. Okay, Kyle, who got your thing of the weekend?
My thing of the weekend is going to be similar to what I've already said, and that's Yuki Tsunoda getting a point in front of his home fans.
Yeah.
Fans. I'm very happy about that and happy for everyone there. Lovely.
But also, like, you know, I said about the bar being quite low for, say, Logan Sargeant or Lance Stroll. So I have to acknowledge that we've done that with Yuki Tsunoda. Like, he wasn't an absolute menace on the radio, didn't use his car to retaliate against his teammate. And we're like, well done. You didn't do those obviously bad things. And we're praising him for meeting the kind of minimum standard in that respect. So I'm happy with that. Just want to acknowledge that we're being hypocrites.
Yeah. And but quite literal hashtag best fans. Yeah. It's all about them. It wasn't necessarily about Yuki. It's about the fans having something to celebrate.
Yeah. I want to give my thing of the weekend to Perez being less far off, but again, that's being hypocritical with the bar. Scott, who gets your thing of the weekend?
Bit of a tough one, I think, actually, for me. I think there's more negatives than there are positives.
Oh, it's much easier to find the negatives. Always easier, because they stand out.
I don't know. I'm going to give it to, and it seems a bit weird because I didn't score points, but Haas. I just feel like they're exceeding expectations at the moment.
Sure. All cars going to argue with.
I just really expected them to be... I really expected them to be down the bottom after the second of Gunther Steiner, which needed to happen. But Nico Hülkenberg finishing 11th. Kevin Magnussen only did two stops, by the way. Everyone else did three, by the looks of it. Yeah, other than Charles Leclerc. So doing much better than expected. That's pretty much it for me.
All right, Jono.
And talking about the people who one stopped or two stopped technically because of the red flag.
Yeah.
Charles Leclerc. And, you know, great job by Ferrari and Leclerc to make what is specifically a very, very, what should have been a very tough day on the tyres. He managed to go one stop from red flag to checkered flag. And I thought it was a great performance by him. As simple as that.
You're not going to give it to his teammate who literally finished on the podium having a stonking weekend.
Well, that's a good point, actually, yeah. But hey, like we said, the most credible award in Formula One
driver
awarded it to Charles Leclerc. So, you know, the fans spoke and, you know, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, can I just add in an extra thing of the weekend? And this is backing off from the Haas thing, was the gyro cam on the car without the stabilization for the onboard actually looked fast and good. I do not like these modern onboard cameras, which are too stabilized and too narrow, and they make it look very docile. That gyro cam looked a bit more like the cameras we had back in the mid-noughties when it looked rapid and fast. I want to see more of them, please. They're awesome. That's my second thing of the weekend. Please more.
Sorry, I know we're going back to Mr. Apex. Can I just... the TV direction was a bit... naff. They missed so many of the important bits this weekend. Like Logan Sargeant, they took forever to get to him going off, even though the yellow was thrown ages. They missed the 5-car pit stop.
Yeah.
They missed Yuki Tsunoda's overtake.
No, it was on camera. It was on camera, but they were talking to Bradley Lord. And as insightful as Bradley Lord from Mercedes is, you just say, excuse me, Mr. Lord.
Wait.
Let's keep going to replays rather than keep going, than actually showing the action on circuit. And I don't know, just a bit of a missed one there.
I'm going to give my thing of the weekend to George Russell, because it's another data point in his battle of establishing himself as the number one. And, you know, I've phrased it as a criticism, but to him, the most important thing is beating Lewis Hamilton. So if staying behind Lewis Hamilton and saving tyres a bit more had given him an overall faster race time, he would have ignored and sacrificed that. Because he would have pushed to get ahead. I was waiting for the radio call. It never came because he didn't have to. But for him, that's the number one priority. Get in front of Hamilton, then save your tyres, then get the priority, then establish yourself as, okay, look, guys, I've got this. I'm clearly the number one driver. I'm on it. Lewis has got his eyes on Ferrari. He's halfway out the door. No foul, no disrespect. Eyes on me. Look at me. Not at Antonelli. Look at me. No, not on Vettel. Oh, God, no, not at Vettel. In fact, that might be a good one. There's rumours of Vettel coming in, isn't it? That might actually be a good one for Russell. Okay, so that is all our awards. That is our race review. I won't be here, but I will be watching from a caravan in the soggy Isle of Wight. So I'll be looking forward to that mailbag show. Send in your questions to feedback@missedapex.net. It can be a suggestion or a comment, but just say hi. Follow us, click all the things and consider supporting us. But wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.